Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or favorite recipe, please contact us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or if you would like to visit our website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you'd like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about saying yes, about affirmative leadership. And you know the topics are announced a little bit ahead of time. And it's kind of, I shouldn't admit this because it's kind of funny, but I got a lot of feedback from people who had actually been with me for a seminar, a workshop, a alternative dispute resolution, where they actually see me do affirmative leadership. And everyone said, you always say yes to everything, and then you say, but. But, fill in the blank, yes. And I suppose that's true, because I don't like to say no to anything that people would, well, that they think is reasonable as an opinion they have. So the answer is yes, but let's talk about it. Let's analyze it. Let's see the practical application. So it's yes, but let's think about it for a minute. You see, and I suppose that's true. I didn't realize that. It's kind of like people send in and they say, you know, during the show you say it depends, like about three times. And it does. It depends on the situation, right? And because we have talk in hypotheticals here, basically, and a lot of times people give exact examples, but it depends on your leadership when you're sitting there, right? When you're doing it, you have basic ideas and foundational premises, but and it's yes, but it depends. So thank you. Thank you for all of your interest and participation, and thank you all for being here. But yes, 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 but we're going to talk about it. So what is affirmative leadership within our context? We often do that on this show, don't we? We define what it is we're talking about first so that we all know what direction we're thinking. And, of course, affirmative leadership is true in a lot of situations, but we'd like to know about it in our context, within the context of a workshop, a seminar, an alternative dispute resolution, a team that we're leading, whatever it is that we're leading that we need to help people reach the end of the process, help them get to a successful outcome, right? Right. So what is it? What is affirmative leadership? You know what? We've got consensus. A lot of people are saying, and this all comes into the idea of affirmative leadership is leading by example. Leading by example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Diane and others, a lot of people are talking about enthusiasm. To really have enthusiasm for the process, to really have enthusiasm for the fact that we are going to succeed. We're going to have a successful outcome. To have enthusiasm for the people, to be genuinely interested in them, to want to know what they have to say, and to be a good example of respectfulness, right? Yeah. That everybody is there because they are committed and because they have an opinion, and we're going to reach consensus about what to do next. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we are practical people. And we don't just lead in theory. We lead in the real world. We lead by example. Mm-hmm. Enthusiasm. Yeah, people are talking about enthusiasm for the process, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Enthusiasm for this is, let's decide what our next step is going to be. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is true that some, I'm going to say it depends again, aren't I? Some groups, depending on the position of your leadership role, some groups want you to, want the leader to tell them what the next step is going to be, right? To lead them through the process and be the director of the process, right? And some groups want to decide on the next step. Now, I must confess, in my opinion, this all comes to the same spot, because the leader helps lead the decision to what the process is going to be, what our next step is going to be, right? But some groups want more of a say, and some groups want you to just tell them and give them direction. Ah, people are saying, how do you know? It has to do with your position as leader, whether you've been brought in by as an expert, whether you're the expert in the group to lead them towards a successful outcome. It depends on the group dynamic, really. And you can tell this by their need for strong leadership. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, a group that is very dissimilar, the participants come from different backgrounds, but also different interests. You know, we've talked about this on prior shows too, archived on recipeforpeacenow.com. A lot of times you have a group that is, okay, you've got two kinds of groups, and then you've got everyone in the middle, which is the most of them. Some groups are very single-minded. Everybody's there for the same reason, to get to the same conclusion for the same purpose, right? These groups want to usually discuss the process because their problem is that they don't know, they know what they want, but they don't know how to get there, right? And they need somebody to lead them to successful outcome. And they want it done fairly promptly because they're all of the same mind, so to speak. It's not a question of reaching consensus. Consensus is there. It's a question of how do we effectuate this? What's this next step in the process? What do we need to do to make it be so, right? That is a group with a strong group dynamic but no direction. They need you to lead them towards understanding what to do next and lead them in how to do it, right? Right. That's a consensus group. We're going to talk about it. We're going to give assignments. We're going to pool our resources, pull together, and get it done. I could tell you how to do it. Let's talk about what we're going to do, right? Right. Then there's another type of group on the other end of the spectrum, and most groups, of course, fall in the middle somewhere, which is why you have to develop the group dynamic and understand it. I know we talk about group dynamic a lot on this show, but it's really important. And they're the people where affirmative leadership is really to tell them what their common interest, them focused. And those kind of groups oftentimes don't want you to lead by consensus so much. You need to really be the person that's the go-to person to just tell them what to do so we can all reach the conclusion that we want. Because sometimes the people in the group, the participants, come from different groups, right? They're like agents. They're like representatives. They have completely different reasons for being there, but they all want the same outcome. And that's what the leader focuses them on, is the same outcome and how to get there. You can't have them reach consensus every little time of the way because they're too diverse. They're going to argue, they're going to have trouble reaching consensus because of the different interests in the room and maybe even the different personalities. I'll go with that. People are talking about different personalities too. You have people who are very determined that their way is right. You ever hear people are using the expression my way or the highway. It's kind of an Americanism, but it means that sometimes people are very set in their position, and they need to understand that in this group we're going to go forward together in this way. I'm the leader. I'm the third party impartial. I am the person who will get you to the successful outcome that you all want. And remember, people, that we all want that outcome, and our personal agendas, our group agendas, not this group, but the group we come from that we represent, are going to be set aside so that we can get a successful outcome on this issue at this time that we all want. Right? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes people, you know, at the beginning of this show, I say that you've got to have willing participants, but you don't have to be friends. Truth, willing participants. But willing participants need a strong leader. Somebody to really keep them focused and prevent discussion from wandering off into contention about issues or about personalities that have no bearing on how we're going to get to the successful outcome, right? Yeah. You see this a lot when you've got something, for example, in the United States, and in other places too. You see this a lot when you need to get something voted upon by the public, something on a ballot, right? You see this a lot when you need to make some sort of a corporate decision that has to do with the public, the consumers, or has to do with employee disputes, right? Because you're all in the same position that you want something, even though you may want it for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And yes, that, you know, people are saying that you've got people that are grandstanding. I heard that just recently. I was doing a union negotiation in the United States, and I know this is a global show, and a lot of places in the world have different kinds of employee groups that represent different types of employees, types being not being personal types, but being levels of employment. All right, like engineers and shipping people, dock workers, and management, and clerical, and administrative. And see, these are all groups within the same organization that have different needs, that are paid differently. Some are independent contractors. Some are actual employees. Mm-hmm. And they are represented in their interests, all-encompassing, do it for this kind of level of employee in other employment situations, groups called unions. Yeah, people using the word ombudsman. I suppose that's true. A union representative would be an ombudsman. But in any event, there's groups that each level of employee actually belongs to, and they pay dues. It comes out of their paycheck. You are a member of, for example, the dock workers union, or you are a member of the mechanical, the engineering union. You are a member of the maintenance union, the people of the maintenance department. Not just for this particular business, which is a very big multinational corporation, but your union represents your level of employee for many organizations all across the United States. What I'm telling you is being the union is a big deal. And you, if you're the union, you want to be effective for your employees, for your members who have different interests, because everybody wants the most money they can get. I mean, let's face it, this is an economic thing, right? Right. Sometimes it's safety in the United States. This is true. It used to be more. I mean, I've been in business for more than 30 years, and I remember when there were some safety issues involved. Nowadays, the safety issues have been pretty much mandated by law. There's a lot of regulations about, safety equipment and time that you can be on so that you don't get fatigued, and about having breaks. You know what I mean. There's a lot of mandated requirements. So it's not usually safety nowadays, but it is money, benefits, right? Yeah. Retirement, medical, yeah, all kinds of good stuff. And what I'm telling you is the union representatives and each organization, each company under the union, each level under the union has a representative, a designated representative who, quite frankly, gets paid pretty well to be a representative, and it's a big deal thing. It makes you powerful, right? You want to keep it. And each union is everywhere in the United States. They do levels every company. So everyone watches in the unions, all the members, watch to see how effective their union is. What can they get me, right? I'm sorry, but that's true. It's an economic thing. Yeah, which means that the union reps are very kind of naturally antagonistic to each other and to management, because they each have to come back to their union and say, this is what I got you, right? Right. And so there's kind of a friction, just naturally speaking, because in order to keep their union representative job and have everybody be in the union, because you know you could, the organization, the levels could opt out. You're not required to be in a union. You pay dues. It's relatively expensive. And you do it so that the employees that do it so that they can get good representation. Good representation being you got me something good, right? Yeah. It's simple as that. It's an economic thought. I don't object to it. I think that everybody should be well compensated and have good health care and like that. So it's fine. But what I'm telling you is that you've got a bunch of people in the room who are inherently trying to get as much as they can for their side, right? Right. And they inherently have dealt with each other, and they've been chosen by their union members in the organization. They get voted on to be the union representative. They've been chosen for their particularly, no, we're not going to use a dirty word. People are filling in the blank. For their particularly insistent personalities, yeah? We'll call them tenacious. This means that they've dealt with each other before, they fought with each other before, they're all kind of set in their opinions. They were all in the room, right? Right. What we needed to do had nothing to do with each individual union, because I've done that too, between the individual unions and, for example, management. And we're talking about strike, which is what unions do if they can't, which is their leverage, right? A strike or a work slowdown. I'm sorry, a strike is when, this is, of course, a global show and not everybody's got these kind of things. A strike is when the workers threaten to not only not come to work, but to boycott the business, not use their union power across the United States to not purchase or not deliver or not do something with the company's products that will hurt them financially. And they tend to picket, as in walk around the building and shout slogans about management. That, yeah. It is a power play by the unions. It depends on the organization and the type of business as to whether or not it is, how effective it is. But it is a traditional power play. Mm-hmm. We won't discuss how it, the union negotiation in that sense. But let's get back to the example is that everybody in the room had their own agenda, right? And they were all very insistent. And they all had dealt with each other before. And they basically speaking, well, didn't like each other, we'll call it. Yeah. They were antagonistic towards each other just because of prior experience. I had dealt with quite a few of them before on different issues with different levels. They weren't usually all in the room together. It was kind of interesting as a group dynamic because the hostility was pulsating. I mean, you didn't have to have any experience with group dynamics to know that this was not a happy group. But they needed to get something changed, something done, something influenced that was going to influence the industry as a whole, law that needed to be, well, they had an interest in having the law be worded so that it was capable of being practical. And there had been some legislation, there were some groups. They weren't wrong, but they were promoting a change that was so broadly worded that it would make business really quite hard to do in the United States and abroad. So they all had an interest, right? Their interest was the same. We want to be able to do business internationally. If our company doesn't do business internationally, we're not going to have jobs. There's going to be layoffs. I mean, it's as simple as that. It was an economic issue. And we all had to keep sight of that economic issue. It's in all our best interest that we stay in business. It's the bottom line, right? And in that instance, as affirmative leader, that's what I had to keep saying. Stop. That's not the issue. Let's stay focused. It's in all our best interest to stay employed, to stay in business, to be capable of competing in the international stage. Right? Right. That's where you don't get consensus in the process. You tell them what to do, and you make them do it. Just take three deep breaths. I don't care what you think of each other. We've got to pull together, or we're all going to have nothing. Right? Right, yeah. So that's an example of we all have different interests, and we all despise each other. But no difference for this specific issue. At this specific point in time, with my affirmative leadership, which will be strong and I'm in charge, this is the next step in the process, right? That's enthusiasm and exertion of control, right? Yeah. So leading by good example, also, under that, because that's what we're really talking about. But then we talked about the process and whether or not we need to have consensus for the process as affirmative leadership, or we need to just tell people what the process is. Mm-hmm. And it depends. It depends on the situation. What else do we lead by example with? You know, a lot of people are pulling out the civility rules. Yes. In Recipe for Peace now, we have very few rules. We talk about what works and how to. I like theory as much as the rest of us, yeah. And theory's nice, but what to do about it is what we want to know. The civility rules is the only rule, and essentially speaking at its base, it says you can't be rude to anyone else, right? as affirmative leaders, as yes leaders, as yes, I know people say, I say yes, but we are a good example always of the civility rules, right? We never lose our temper. We never get rude. We never interrupt if it's somebody's time to speak, right? Yeah. We guide the process, but we, yeah, it is true, but that's not reaching the civility rules. People are saying sometimes, Warner and others are saying that sometimes, and Hussein is right too, that sometimes you need to end an issue discussion because it's getting us nowhere, and it's kind of getting us off the path. But that's a focus thing. And I usually say when we, I actually come right out and say it. It's when with a smile and a yes and like that, we get back on the focus of what's going to get us to the conclusion and not wound around on some sort of issue that we just, you can't keep chewing on it if it's gone, if we need to move on and find a solution, right? Yeah, we're not going to grandstand. Some groups, yeah, Hussein and others are saying that you need to have some written civility rules. Some groups need that. Some groups need to actually have a time amount for everyone to speak at the beginning and then as we go along, because otherwise you can't keep control of it and we're just going to circle and circle and circle. Yeah. A lot of people, this may be an Americanism also, but you all know what this means. A lot of people are calling it a dog chasing its tail. Yeah. You know how dogs, they just go round and round, but they're not going to catch their tail, right? And if they did manage to catch their tail, what on earth would they do with it? It has no utility. They're going to bite their own tail, right? So it's a good expression because it explains that you can't keep circling around. You got to go forward. Yeah. And yes, we are good examples of civility while pushing the process forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we have to set the issues too. Kirsten and others are saying that you have to have a positive perspective while encouraging new ideas. Yeah, that's when you need to, in a very affirmative yes manner, move the conversation, move the group, move the process forward. Because the encouraging of new ideas is to get us a step further in the process of what to do about it. Mm-hmm. And we need to, of course, be practical people. And we need to go forward so that we can get success. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now that we've found out what we're going to do, how do we encourage affirmative attitudes in the group? Because we've got one, right? The leader has an affirmative attitude and is pushing us forward. But the people, the participants, have to have an affirmative attitude, the individuals. And so does the group dynamic. So does the group. Because remember that what we're really dealing with is, yes, individual personalities, but we're really dealing with them in the context of a group, right? And that's really what makes the group dynamic. Because we're not dealing so well, we might be dealing one-on-one when we have a break and we go to talk to somebody, but the real trick of it is the group dynamic, is the individuals acting as a group. Mm-hmm. So how do we encourage that to be affirmative? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting, a good point. Suki says, by explaining the process, answering why, W-H-Y, which she puts in parenthesis, by explaining the process and answering why. I like to, yeah, we're getting a little dissension about that, about the answering why, the why question, W-H-Y. I like to ask the why question, to get down to the bottom of what's happening. We've talked about that. We've talked about the five W's, who, what, where, when, and why. If somebody is proposing a course of action and we want to know if it's a good idea or not, right? I don't necessarily encourage questioning of leadership just for the sake of questioning of leadership, because the answer to why is because I'm in charge sometimes, because somebody has to take the wheel. Somebody has to be the person who's in charge and directs the teams and leads. Mm-hmm. But I do very much like to explain the process. In fact, it's one of the things that I do right up front when we first get together. Even in a mediation, I have an opening statement, right, where I explain what we're going to do. And I explain that we're going to set a goal. We're going to know what success looks like, right? Yeah. And I explain, if I need to, what my role is in the process. Third party impartial, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to explain that right up front because, quite frankly, although we've done it a gazillion times, a lot of times this is the first experience for our participants. This group is first gotten together because of a definite need, and these people have never been in a situation like this. We see it all the time, so we think that it's common, but it's really not. A lot of times, a lot of people never join any kind of a group or are involved in any kind of a negotiation or mediation. So they don't understand what's supposed to happen. They don't understand their role in it. They don't understand, well, they don't understand how the civility rules work, right? Yeah, you got to explain these things. How are they going to know if you don't tell them? That's my motto. How about yours? Yeah, you got to know these things. You got to be able to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like to explain the process, and I'm afraid I like to ask why, but there's a point at which you can't have your leadership challenged with a bunch of why questions in public, and it also diverts from the issues. Sometimes, and we've talked about this on prior shows, archived on recipeforpeacenow.com, sometimes somebody is attempting to derail the process. They are insincere in their membership in the group. Or they've been sent special. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole different civility rules discussion, isn't it? And I ask why. Mm-hmm. Who, what, where, when, and why. We get down to the bottom of that right away. If I see that I've got, well, people are calling it a spy. Maybe. If it's a very contentious issue, if there are, not contentious necessarily within the group, but there are other sides that want exactly the opposite than the group that you're dealing with, and a lot of times that's true, and membership is not selected by the leader or by someone else, mm-hmm. Sometimes you get someone from the opposite camp wanting to know what it is that you're doing. Ooh, people say sometimes they send somebody from the opposite camp into the other side. Well, all right, we won't discuss that, because I do think that that is not so ethical, and I don't encourage it. But if you've got someone who is trying to derail the process, we're going to find out why. That's a real good why question. Mm-hmm. How else do we encourage affirmative attitudes in the group and in the individuals? Affirmative attitudes. Angela and others are saying with conscious effort. Yeah, we really do. We watch the group dynamic, don't we? And we watch the enthusiasm level. And we watch the focus so that we can really get to the successful outcome. Mm-hmm. George and others are mentioning, and this is true, encourage an affirmative attitude, encourage enthusiasm, really, by creating a timeline and tracking progress. I don't know that timelines have a final, well, I guess they do. They've got a final end because they've got the successful outcome. Sometimes timelines have a definite dates on them if it's something that has an expiration. It has a time limit, like getting something on a ballot, for example. But timelines to track progress, I'm kind of in favor of that. I don't know if I'm so much in favor of a mission statement. I don't know if it needs to be, yeah, some of you are saying actual timelines that are written down and on a board, on a, yeah. I like to have a timeline. Ryan and others are talking about celebrating progress. That's how I usually do a timeline, is that when we have a success in our steps, we're getting there, but we haven't really reached a successful conclusion yet. I like to celebrate each small victory. And that's really the creation of a timeline, right? Because in the process, especially if it's taking a while, people forget how far, it's just a human thing, how low down we were when we started, how bad off we were when we started. It seems like you're not getting anywhere, right? Because it's taken a while and it's kind of slow going and you have to connect with people and they're, it's just sometimes it gets kind of sloggy. You know, you have to keep moving forward, but it seems like it's going kind of slow. And one of the things that a timeline and a celebration of each success does is it reminds us that we are making progress. It reminds us that we're getting there. It reminds us that we are on the right path. It's just that sometimes the right path takes a little while, right? We are achieving our goal. We just got to keep going. We've come far. It's just that it seems like it's taken a while, but look how far we've come already. Too late to turn back now. Yeah. See, that's the idea of the thing. Yeah. And so it keeps enthusiasm up. Because sometimes people are very enthusiastic, but they think, you know, it's going to take, I don't know, 6 hours. But it doesn't. Life doesn't move that quickly if it's really something that needs to have a process and needs to be done. It takes a little while. Mm-hmm. And people start to lose enthusiasm. But if they understand that it's part of the process and we're working our way forward and we are getting somewhere, that's a real good affirmative attitude booster. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dwayne and others are saying and that also you encourage affirmative attitude by giving praise for efforts and by saying thank you. I like that. I am very generous with praise and with thank you and with acknowledging that someone has really put some extra miles, put some extra effort into something. I think it's important, first of all, affirming to the person who will do it again and will keep pushing forward and keep working really hard because they're using their time, they're using their effort. It's hard, it's complicated, it's something that needs to be done, but gee, it's more effort than the other people in the group are doing, right? Yeah. And you want people to understand that if they do that, if they really work hard, if they really call their contacts and get an expert opinion and like that, It's appreciated. Yeah. It's a really good thing. And you didn't just sit back and let somebody else do it. It is also encouraging to other people to do it too, because you see that you get to be a star. You get to be, well, the people are calling it teacher's pet. Well, really. No, but you get to be acknowledged, right? Yeah. And it's an affirmation. It makes you feel good. And then it makes the other people feel good. And then they think, well, gee, I would like to feel good too. I'll work hard and then everybody will think that I'm a star. We can all be stars together. Yeah, it's good that way. So, yes, I praise and thank you. Be generous. Be enthusiastic. Be pleased. Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, because after all, even if we're not all volunteers, even if we're being paid, and not necessarily paid by the group, but by an employer, and we have been tasked with this group, like the union people, for example, yeah, and they were all being paid, really. I mean, they were being paid for their hours, and it was taking hours off of work time, but they were being paid for work, so they were being paid. But some people do more than others, and some people just sit there and put in their time, right? They just put in their seat-warming time. And some people really, really put an effort in. They really take it seriously. And the take it seriously needs to be acknowledged because it is harder. Yeah. It is more beneficial. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very important. Be grateful. Mm-hmm. How do we encourage affirmative attitudes? Naiva says by acknowledging when you need an expert opinion. By acknowledging when you need an expert opinion. Sometimes you need one, right? And sometimes we've reached an impasse. Sometimes we don't know what the next step in the process should be. There's several things that we could do, several paths that we could take, and we need help deciding. Because they've all got their merits, okay? And they've all got their problems, but they seem kind of equal on what to do next. It's not always clear. Well, how are we going to resolve that? We have thought about the different paths. They all seem fine. What are we going to do to make it so that we can decide how to proceed? And the answer is that we are going to call in an expert. Call in somebody to help us decide, to help us think through what the different options are. And maybe even think through in a different way, with a different perspective than we have in the room. Because we've done our thinking through, right? And we've still got three options. And they lead to different things, whichever one we take. You know what I mean? They're not in a vacuum. So we want to make the best choice, given the information we have at the time, right? Because sometimes things don't come out as we expect. But we want to make a reasoned decision. By acknowledging when you need an expert opinion will help us. That Eva is right. That's leading by affirmative leadership, by yes. Yes, but we need to have an expert weigh in on this to tell us, well, not necessarily what to do, but to tell us what our options are, to tell us and have an opinion about what the outcome, the reasonable outcome will be from these choices, for example. Yeah, when you're acknowledging when you need an expert opinion. Anthony and others are also adding that, you know, we look at research a lot, And we make teams in order to get research and to think about things and to see what others are saying, to see what the experts are saying, right? And you really need to look at all sides. By looking at research in all sides, as Anthony says in capital letters. Yeah, because research is usually the internet nowadays. Research might be calling somebody. That would be calling in an expert opinion. I'm going to call that expert opinion. On the internet, you can find a validation for anything, right? Yeah. I don't care what it is you want. There's always some group that says that's the way to do it. Mm-hmm. But you need to look at the source. And you need to look at what other groups are saying. You need to look at all sides of the research and not just stop and say, look, we found it. This is the right path because this is how other people are doing it. Yeah, this is true. But what about others? What about all sides? Because we want to look at all sides so we can have affirmative leadership and affirmative participation so that we know what it is that's been done in the past, what it is that people are attempting for the future, and how our next step fits into that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a learning tool, but it's also a deceptive one sometimes. You have to look. You have to dig and look at all sides is the key to it. Mm-hmm. This is a good point. We use it a lot. We use the workbook a lot for this, the Recipe for Peace Now workbook that's called How to Get Along with Anyone, 63 Strategies for Success. Yes? It's brilliant. I know this because I wrote it. Natalie and others are saying to use hypotheticals to avoid confrontation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that a lot. We do that, okay, we do it especially in workshops and seminars where it's all hypotheticals, right? Because there is no confrontation. But sometimes we use the workbook even within a smaller group with a real-life problem because it allows us to work through a hypothetical without having to lay blame in any way. And it is a way to come to realization of what needs to be done that's kind of self-realization. As you're working it through, you understand how to apply it because the book, the workbook has 63 strategies that are standalone with an example and an exercise to do, which means that you need to look at it and you need to say, well, this is a hypothetical. Let's do this just for fun. See, just for fun is a good word. And then we practice it, and then we work our way through the real life using the foundation of the hypothetical so that nobody feels that they're being singled out in any way, right? Nobody feels that maybe somebody thinks they're wrong or stupid or anything like that because it's just a hypothetical. It's just for fun. But we've chosen the one that applies to our situation, right? Yeah. I do that a lot because it's a way to build consensus and a way out of an impasse that's happening because people are very, very certain of their position. But they need to come more towards the middle, right? Yeah. It's a good non-judgmental way to have people come to a realization all by themselves about what needs to be done. That makes sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So use the hypotheticals to avoid confrontation, and it's consensus building. Yes, Natalie and others are correct. Good point. Balu says that you need to also use, in order to encourage an affirmative attitude, you can use the connections with participant networks to gain new insights and group members. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if the group membership is kind of open like that and you would like to hear, have more people, you would like more opinions maybe. Also, you might be garnering strength in numbers because it's more impressive, especially if you're dealing with government officials or something. Yeah, and you've got a open membership type group. Usually those type of groups are many, many members that might even pay a fee, or might, even if they don't pay a fee, they sign up, like for information, like for newsletters and things, they sign on to be members. They sign that they are affirmatively interested in the outcome of this particular group. Usually a group like that has a whole bunch of members, the more the merrier, because if you're dealing with some sort of elected officials especially, they're particularly interested in something that their voters are interested in, right? Yeah, because remember, elected officials want to keep their jobs. And you usually have a lot of members, but a core group of decision makers. We'll call them the executive committee. It's not always called that. But there's a core group of really involved who are the participants in your group, and the other members are interested parties who want the conclusion that we're going to come to, who want the successful outcome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, you get connections with networks to get new members. You might even join with other groups to make one bigger group so that you've got more say, more power. Mm-hmm. How else do we encourage an affirmative attitude? Uh-oh, yes, we are. People are saying you're going to run out of time and not get to the recipe, but we're having such an important discussion, and we're going to try to get through everybody's opinions because they are so wonderful and so valid. We will get to the recipes next time, and I apologize. Yeah, we have like 7 minutes left, and there's still lots of people wanting to be heard. And so next time I'll try to do better time management. But I do think it's important to have the discussion, and the recipes are wonderful at the very end. And it is true that I don't always make it within our hour, because an hour is really not long enough for this show, is it? And so we're going to get there, but not maybe. So how else do we get affirmative attitude? Thomas and others are talking about having careful team building, and that we really pick our teams so that they'll be efficient and that their personalities will work well together and their strengths will work well together. I like to put people together who have different strengths to the team so that we get a complete picture in the report, right? The report to the group. Mm-hmm. And the next thing we're going to talk about with affirmative attitude, kind of quickly, I'm afraid, is participant satisfaction. It's the other thing that a lot of people are talking about. That in order to have an affirmative attitude, people have to be satisfied. They have to be enthusiastic. They have to be satisfied, for example, with the process. Raylan and Andrew and others are talking about they need to understand the process. That's when we tell them about it right at the beginning. And they need to buy in. They need to understand their part in the process and what they need to do. They have to be clear about what it is that they're being asked to do, what their task is. Because you can't successfully complete it if you don't know what it is. So you have to be clear about what it is, the expectation. What is it you need to do? Mm-hmm. Participant satisfaction also with acceptance of the goal, right? Acceptance of what it is that we're doing. That's the buy-in, maybe. Mm-hmm. Joji says that it needs that the goal needs to be clearly defined. Mm-hmm. That it needs to be, we have to decide what success looks like, right? And what the goal is so that we know when we've got it. Otherwise, how are we going to know that we've reached it, we're successful? Sometimes it's not as clearly defined as the voters said yes, and we got on the ballot and we won. Well, and then what now is the question, of course, after that. But sometimes the goal needs to be defined so that we know when we've reached that goal and we need to go on to the next one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don and others are talking about being realistic in the goal when you clearly define it, and that sometimes it does modify, right? Because things happen. We learn things, for one thing. We reach conclusions. We delegate tasks. And sometimes things happen in the outside world that affects our goal, too. Mm-hmm. So you need to be realistic. A lot of people are talking about economics and time frames, right? Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to call political climate, because a lot of times it has to do with something that lawmakers have to talk about, and political climate, with how the voters are thinking in the United States. They take surveys a lot around here and take statistics, right? And sometimes you have to look at those real carefully, too, for the underlying premise before you decide that that statistic is true, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, my favorite statistic, people are going to say your favorite statistic. My favorite statistic is, and it's a true one, that 50% of the women who graduated in my LLM class, that's an advanced law degree, I have an LLM in tax, it makes me a business lawyer, 50% of the women in my graduating class married a law professor. That is an absolutely true statistic. But you have to look for an underlying premise. Yes, the underlying question that you must ask is, how many women were in your graduating class? The answer is two, and I didn't marry a law professor. That's still 50%, right? That's an outrageous number. But it's one person, because there's an underlying fact that you have to discover. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's my little warning on statistics. People are talking about satisfaction of the participants in a physical manner also, yeah? And that's political climate, too. They look to statistics, but you have to look to what's happening. Physical logistics, seats, time and frequency, the location, the comfort level, the actual physical comfort level, ability to get there. In the United States, in big cities, parking is always a big issue, right? Yeah. Accessibility of facilities, all those things. And we, my friends, are running out of time. Oh, my goodness, and we got wonderful discussion. We will try to make the recipes next time. My apologies. I want to thank you all for being here. Thank you for your time and for your participation and for all of your thoughts. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on that website, peacenow.com. This one will be archived. It takes a few minutes. It's computer dumb. It's wonderful. It's like magic. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.